All right, everybody, and hey, welcome back to the CFO Story. I'm your host, Jason Lee. I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Sammy Abood.
Welcome and hello.
And we are joined by Bob Wells with Bob Wells. That's right. My friend is a solopreneur, having gone out and launched his own business here in the last year or so. But very excited to have you on today, Bob. And I know you have an extensive history, and it's going to be great to – I mean, I'm personally just excited to have you tell your story because I've gotten to know you so well over the last few years. But again, want to welcome you on today. Why don't you share a little bit about your background and tell our audience a little bit about who you are?
Well, thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. I started with my career by getting a master's in business administration from University of Chicago in finance, and went into banking and started with a little bank in Chicago called Northern Trust, and then moved to a much bigger bank, Union Bank of Switzerland, which was the largest of the Swiss banks, AAA rated. I had a 16-year career with them in Chicago and New York. I was a lender, lending to Fortune 500 companies. I managed relationships. I worked in the credit administration department and later in the credit area. So one of the teams that I ran did the financial analysis of all of the clients in North America. And that's whether they were manufacturers, service companies, transportation companies, mining companies, finance companies, you name it. We did the financial analysis for all of those preparatory to loans being approved. I left them back in about 1999 to try a venture of my own, and found that actually at that time, the business that I chose, which was a franchise, it didn't work out so well. So I sold it. I sold it the month before 9/11 in 2001, and figured I'd go back to New York City and take a high-paying job again, and that was not available right after 9/11. The entire finance industry shut down. So instead, I stayed in Las Vegas, where I had moved to, and took a job with Bank of America doing commercial real estate construction finance. So shopping centers, office buildings, warehouses, industrial buildings, that's what I did. Spent some time after that. I found that I didn't want to be a banker the rest of my life. That's why I had left in the first place. And a friend of mine enticed me to join him in the home building business. And I was his CFO, and that was just in time for the entire housing market in the United States to crash, and Las Vegas was the epicenter of the crash. And so mostly I did workout work, which is interesting stuff. I was negotiating with the FDIC, who had taken over the bank.
Interesting.
And so when I finished up that assignment, I took a job here in Houston as CFO of a consulting company that specialized in the oil and gas space. They did reservoir management. And they did that not for East Texas, but for the national oil companies of like Kuwait, Mexico, et cetera.
Wow.
Big, massive oil fields. And we grew that business from when I joined them, $7 million a year to $67 million. And it was, I mean, it was an amazing business. And then the oil and gas industry took a downturn. And so we agreed that they didn't need a high-priced CFO when business was declining. And I thought that I knew enough that I would go out and be a CFO privately to businesses, hang up my own shingle. I joined a national firm at the time that did that kind of work, and I was with them for 5 years, and then I went out on my own this past year, and so now I'm Bob Wells' CFO, and
love
I'm
it.
Having a blast.
That's fantastic. Well, you are a joy to be around, and sounds like you have impeccable timing for the career opportunities that you chose. You're like, every single one of them was like right before a major disaster. Whatever it was, I know that if there's anybody on the earth who could tackle it with a positive attitude and come out with some great wisdom from those experiences and then use those to help people down the road, it's you. And I think from my time spent with you, do you ever feel like those experiences have almost crafted you specifically for some of the situations that you run into? It's almost like, Do you ever walk into client situations and go, okay, yeah, this is why I'm here, because all that training I was getting through those, you know, rough seasons is now able to help me with clients?
Yeah, I really got first class training. And then people think that training is enough, but experience, especially the world of hard knocks.
I guess, training meaning hands-on, actually having to do it.
But. Yeah, it's the school of hard knocks that really teaches you the lessons and helps you know how to be prepared for different situations. So running my own business, as well as seeing these other businesses, I learn what it means to have tight cash flow, have to figure out how you're going to pay the bills. How are you going to make payroll? How are you going to solve the problems that are coming up and do it not with a multi-million dollar budget, but with ingenuity, creativity, relationships. Those are the things that start making a difference and help you be successful.
And meanwhile, the business doesn't quit running and waiting for you to figure those things out, does it? The business continues. So that's, which is more of just the adding on to the challenges.
It never sleeps. Yep. You're checking the bank balance every night, every morning. Yep.
Absolutely.
Sounds like my life during this move in the last week.
Oh, yeah.
Checking the bank balance every morning. Sure. Like, oh, my God, again, another check. So, I completely understand that and the realm of that. So let's talk about this. You're called in to solve problems, right? Typically, when someone's hiring you, it's because they need help getting their business back in order and or they're trying to grow. But they're missing. They need a fractional CFO, somebody to step in and step into that role. What are some of the issues that most companies are asking your help for?
So the kinds of things that I see people asking me for help on are when they know the business is growing, they know that they're profitable, but they don't know where the dollars are coming from to pay rent. They don't know where the dollars are coming from to pay payroll. They're afraid that if they miss a payroll or if they don't pay somebody, they're going to be out of business. And they're scared and they don't know how to solve the problem. And so they often can use someone to come in and take a look at things who's had this experience of dealing with this time after time after time, who's able to say, let's look at your situation. Okay, what assets do you have that we can leverage? What receivables do you have that we can collect? What financing can we get to help you through this rough spot? And what a lot of businesses don't realize is that they can be growing fast and they can be profitable, but growth takes capital. Mm-hmm. Growth takes cash. And so, you know, if your receivables are growing and if your inventory is growing, that's a good thing, right? Well, it is, but it means that you're not getting cash. You're spending money.
It's locked up. Yep.
And it's locked up. And it may be locked up very profitably. Mm-hmm. But they've got to figure out, okay, how do I rework things? Sometimes it's tweaks to improve the cash flow. Sometimes I find that there are people who don't know that there are tax credits that they can go after that will help them. Sometimes they don't have anybody who's really looking after the accounts receivable and working hard at collecting them. Sometimes I had one company that had a partner that they wanted to get rid of because the partner was somebody they had sold out to, but they still owed him a lot of money. And they didn't think that they could easily go to their bank because their bank was putting them under pressure. Well, I was able to look at it, look at the situation and say, look, over the last 5 years, you have paid down both the bank and your partner a great deal of money. In fact, the amount of debt that you have paid off is part of what has caused your liquidity problem. But you have assets that are good assets. So let's tell the story the right way. Let's show what your profitability really is. And let's go out and shop to a different bank or a group of banks. Mm-hmm. To see what we can do for you. And we did. And we managed to refinance all of their debt. We managed to lower the interest rate and extend the maturities. And so in their case, we cut their monthly nut just for the debt service from $30,000 to $15,000. And that made a huge difference.
Sure.
Yeah, it's interesting too. You mentioned that because I have a client right now where that's that same exact scenario. So for the partner was his father was the, you know, this happens a lot where it's second, third generation family. And the way they structured the debt, nobody was there up front to really walk them through that process. And so they built a deal that, you know, that kind of handshake, here's how we're going to do the buyout. And then ultimately the dad unintentionally put him in a huge sling, especially over the last 3 years, because of the cost of materials for their business was so high, because of inflation and some of the things that were happening there in the industrial construction space. And ultimately what ended up happening was their bank started calling them online. This is a bank they've been with for 25 years. And kind of going back to that relationship with the bank, after 25 years, they went back to this bank and said, wait a minute, after 25 years, I've got proven track record. You can see where the financials are, and you're going to squeeze me mm-hmm. for this. So he took, like you said, they're educated. They took that exact, their financials, the true story, and took the story down the street and went and got a bank that was really willing to bank on them, give them a bigger line, and not call them on their lines, and basically picked up banks. And that bank lost that business because of that, right? So it's all in the story that you tell, but it's also a lesson to bankers that, hey, if you got a guy with a great track record and great experience, you got to look at the whole picture, not just a piece of the picture.
Yeah, and a lot of times a bank gets in a mode where they have certain ratios, certain numbers that they tend to look at. Mm-hmm. And because they don't have the training to do it, they don't go back and rethink the big picture. Mm-hmm. Instead, they're looking at these nice little spreadsheets and measures that they get. And you take it to another bank who's looking at it holistically, and they go, well, yeah, we can finance that because you have a piece of real estate that's on the books at $500,000, but it's worth $3 million.
Right.
Oh, okay. So there's something we can do to relieve the tension here and solve the problem. But they're looking just at certain ratios that don't necessarily tell the whole story. And so it creates a problem.
Love it. And so you talked about, and now that we're talking about that specifically, and trying to grow and or be in that position, and how do you work with the bank? Talk about companies that need lines of credit. Like how do you go about and develop that? If I'm listening right now and I'm a young CFO or somebody who needs to be listening to this, and I'm struggling to put my company in a position to get an extended line of credit or grow that, what are some tools or techniques that you would use to do that?
Well, if I'm a CFO of a company, mm-hmm. the first thing I would do is I would know a lot of bankers.
Okay.
And I would talk to them about what their lending parameters are, what their policies are, how they structure things. What you will find is that very often banks all handle things somewhat in the same fashion, but they have differences. And so you want to know and understand what those differences are. You want to know and understand what's important to them as a bank. Some banks are interested in one industry, but not in another. So the first place, it's really important to understand banks. And if you don't know what the bank's lending standards are, by talking to three or four different bankers, that's all you need to talk to. You'll get pretty much a consistent story and you'll know, okay, the bank is looking at several things. First of all, they want to know what is your credit and your credit history, because what they've found over time is that that's one of the most important things. And whether it's a business or an individual, how they've handled their debt says almost more than all the models that you can create about what they're going to do or what they've done. And if they've got great numbers, but they haven't paid their debts, you got a problem with them ethically. So you want to know, okay, do they pay their bills and how do they pay them? And when you're looking at a business, there are various companies that will actually track how you pay your bills. Do you pay them on time? Do you pay them within 30 days? Do you pay them within 60 days? How do you pay your bills? And so they pay attention to that. You need to be watching that. Mm-hmm. And you can't fix it all of a sudden. That's something you have to clean up over time if there's a problem. The bank is also going to look at what is your capital. What do you have in the way of capital that you can turn around and rely on as a additional source of repayment if the borrower is unable to pay you? You're going to look at their cash flow. How much money is coming in and out of the company, and how confident are you in that going on and continuing in the future. So those are all things that you look at. And then you look at things like leverage. You look at what's known as liquidity. Liquidity is, you know, how quickly do you turn your assets, your inventory and your receivables into cash? And so as bills come due, do you have enough cash? And they've got ways of looking at that from your balance sheet that, you know, makes a lot of sense. So, you know, you want to educate yourself on the banks, their policies, their procedures. You want to understand what are the ratios that they tend to look at in terms of cash flow, in terms of liquidity, in terms of leverage. And you want to be able to write it up in a way that makes sense to a normal reader, especially to a banker, so that when he goes through, he sees that you have thought about profitability, you have thought about leverage and liquidity and all of these different issues. Sometimes they get really deep and they'll look at, okay, what's your inventory turnover ratio and what's your receivable? But you can probably tell the story much simpler than that if you understand it.
Understood.
Sure. And be ready to share the strengths as well, right, to lending institutions and banks. Let them see that you are proud of your strengths and that it's gotten you to this certain place, right?
Yes, but you have to be careful to not ignore the weaknesses. Mm-hmm. A banker that sees you tell the story with just positives and they know that there's weaknesses is not going to trust you.
You have to be aware of what those are as well.
And so you need to be able to tell them, look, here's the areas that are problem areas and that are weaknesses, and here is how I address and solve those. Right. That will give confidence.
Yeah.
And you need to build confidence in the bankers if you're going to be talking to them.
Hmm. That's some wisdom. Hopefully somebody's taking notes if they're listening to that. Bob, real quick, and this, I'm just curious because a lot of this work is, and a lot of what I hear as we've talked to CFOs is this ability to communicate a story. And a lot of times I feel like that's almost like the one of the major differentiators between somebody with an accountant mindset or somebody with a CFO mindset or somebody with a almost more of an administrative mindset of controller work versus actually how do I take the data and then tell a story? Because that's really where what business is it's storytelling. It's how do you tell the story to your team? How do you tell the story to your partners? How do you tell the story to your banker? How do you tell the story of the organization? Because if you can't tell a story, no one's going to follow you or no one's going to believe in you or no one's going to buy into what you're doing. And to me, it feels like that's such a huge role for CFOs is storytelling. But you know, creating the story from the data as opposed to just being the data just being housed somewhere. Talk to me about some of the other things that you see are major differentiators between a controller and a CFO.
So typically a controller and a bookkeeper are looking at the history. And so I don't know about you, but I don't like driving down the road looking in the rearview mirror. But right. That's the numbers that your accounting system is going to give you. What somebody wants to know is what's coming. That requires an ability to see, to forecast, to create believable reasons. It's not just a matter of giving them numbers, but explaining to somebody, okay, here's the sales that I expect to get, and here's why I think I can get those. I've got this many salespeople. I got this many customers. This is my market. You explain the story so that people understand it. I mean, you know, the great teachers in all of history always taught with stories. Why? Because that relates to us. We can relate to stories. And those stories often need to be things that we can equate to our common experience. So for example, if I talk to somebody about leverage, I might talk about, okay, on your house, what's the house worth and how much debt do you have on that house? Okay, when we measure the value of that debt against the amount of the debt against the value of the house, now we understand how much leverage there is there. And we also can talk about equity. A lot of times those words that we use in accounting don't mean something to the average listener. And a lot of times your investors are people who have made money in the world by doing businesses, but they still don't understand the lingo. And so accounting is a language. It's a way of communicating to one another, and accountants use it to communicate to each other in ways that they can all understand, and it has to be consistent. So they have rules about what is the correct way to look at the different numbers. But what someone who is an investor in a business or someone who is a banker, they want to hear, why should I have faith and confidence in you? What is it that makes your business one that I should take a risk on and put my money there? Or why should we make in a business? Why should we invest in this machine? Well, you need to be able to tell the story of what you're going to do with that machine, mm-hmm. and how it's going to add value to your business.
Yeah, there's more to it than just history of numbers, right?
Yeah.
You have to be prepared to explain and discuss and where are we going with it.
Right? And that's going to be one of the differences between an accountant sort and a CFO sort. And the CFO sort should also not just be able to tell you that story, but be able to solve many other kinds of problems, because financial problems will include human resources and your human capital and taxes on, you know, payroll taxes, sales taxes, all those things. They need to be able to take the whole picture and put it together. That requires storytelling.
Yeah. Fantastic. Yeah,
very well said.
So one of the questions that I thought you wanted to bring to the discussion today, which I think makes a lot of sense, because I know even in my business for the longest time, it's hard when you're growing your business to justify paying for outside help. Or consultants or people like that. So I wanted to tackle everything as a solopreneur for a longest time. Even at this firm, we have support staff, but there's still things that I need. And sometimes I'm like, I can do that. And the more I throw on my back, the more I end up doing what I would consider ineffective things with my time. So I, because of my skill set. So I've had to learn to say, no, I'm going to pay somebody or find some help to handle that. How do you help business owners justify and see if I'm a CFO when I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about finding additional support to step in and help grow our business or help point us in the right direction? When and how do you go about justifying bringing on somebody into the organization from a consultant or outside, whether it be a business coach, fractional CFO? How do you do that?
Well, in the first place, we all need to remember and understand that even the best players in the NBA and the NFL and, you know, gymnastics at the Olympics level, they all have coaches, even though they are the best of the best. Michael Jordan had a coach. And so all of these people had coaches. Why? Because every individual doesn't know everything. The question is, how good is your coach? Now, the other problem is that there's people out there, I shouldn't say another problem, but there are lots of people out there that say they're coaches, and they're not all good coaches.
Right.
And so you need to be able to figure out whether somebody is going to be able to serve you and help you. My personal philosophy is, let me show you what I can do, and then you will pay me to keep me.
Right.
And I think it's a good way to do business. And I find that generally speaking, people are happy to do that. That's how I keep my clients happy, is I'm giving them value. And if they don't want to pay me, then I can go away. But generally, I'm adding far more value than what I cost. And that's what you want to be looking for, is somebody who doesn't ask you necessarily for money before you've shown them what you can do, but rather shows you what they can do for you and how that adds value to you. And then, hey, if you don't want to pay them, you don't get the value. It's pretty simple.
Yeah. Understood. So let's talk about some of your experiences and how they've translated to, because I mean, you went from business, right? So working for other people to really in the last 6 years, entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're actually going into companies, but also living the same story that they're living, trying to build a business while, which is an interesting relational aspect that I think could be missed by a lot of people that are listening to this right now.
Yeah. You'd say I eat what I kill.
Yeah. Right. So talk to me about that transition, 'cause I'm intrigued by that for somebody. Maybe they're sitting there wondering, maybe I should step out on my own. What are some ideas or thoughts that you would say you would want to share with somebody who's questioning whether or not they should go out and maybe perhaps pursue their own thing?
Well, I think number one, you have to look at your personality. Are you somebody who is comfortable talking to other people and building relationships? If you are too much of an introvert, it might be hard for you to go out and develop business. And so that's one thing that you have to look at. You may be brilliant in the back room. You may be brilliant crunching numbers. But if you can't go out and talk to people, you're going to have a stressful time getting business. If you can't ask for business, you're going to have a hard time. So one of the things is look at your own personality and think about whether this is a fit for you. Another is get involved in the best networking organizations you can find. So I am a member of several organizations. I'm a member of Rotary. I'm a member of Vistage. I'm a member of Landing Big Whales. And there are other groups that I have been in, and I use that to get to know people in the community. I want to know as many different business people as I can, because I never know when I'm going to need Jason's or John's or Bill's skill set to solve a particular problem. And so, for example, you know, I had a client that needed the skill set that you have, and I brought that client to you. I have clients that need other skill sets, and I will take them to somebody else who is a specialist. I'm not a tax guy, so I need to know tax guys. I'm not an HR specialist. I need to know HR specialists. So the only way you're going to do that is to be out a lot. And so you need to realize you're not going to work 40 hours a week doing financial number crunching. You're probably going to spend at least half of that time developing relationships in order to be able to work with those people and help them help their clients or call on them to help your clients.
I love that. And I think one thing that people make the mistake of, and I run into this all the time, when LinkedIn, like something will happen and somebody will lose a job or transition their career. Mm-hmm. And because I'm a pretty big networker, they'll introduce them to me saying, hey, can you help this person get plugged in or go do stuff? And I'll start talking to them. I'm like, tell me about your existing network. And they go, I don't have one. I've had a job. And I go, well, that's not a good excuse, right? Like, I understand that you work a lot, but you've got to let this be your first lesson, right?
That, yeah, it takes time.
Like that you can't just if I get you a job and you go get another job, you better make time, whether mm-hmm. it be a couple of times a month, go join the Rotary Club. Even if you're not ready to be an entrepreneur, maybe that's not your thing. Your network is your net worth and everything. Well, so even if you want to deliver better results as a CFO in corporate America, you need a network.
Sure.
You need to know the bankers. You need to know the people around you. You need to know the people who know the people so that you can find solutions. And if you can't do it physically, then we have tons of technology today that will help support you with that. I look at LinkedIn almost like a giant, huge, I think of it almost like a virtual conference center, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
it's a community.
With thousands of people standing out there virtually that I can approach. And I know that there's going to be hundreds of them that are going to say, I don't want anything to do with you. But then there's also going to be the ones that are saying, welcome, sure, great, let's get to know each other. And then you never know what kind of solution or relationship you're going to build. So I love that. That was some great wisdom from you, Bob. I appreciate that. Sammy, anything you want to do to shift gears?
Yeah, so we've heard a lot of wisdom here. And, you know, I've sat in the role of a CFO, so I really enjoy hearing different perspective. And very fresh, very honest perspective. I can relate to a lot of it. Thank you for sharing what you've shared. One thing I would ask is, you know, do you have any words or additional words of wisdom that you would share with, say, a CFO who's maybe just kind of cutting their teeth or just kind of starting their role as a CFO? What words of wisdom would you have from what you've seen and what you've been through?
You're talking about as an independent CFO or as a CFO of a company?
It could be either.
Well, let's talk about if you're joining a company and you're being appointed a CFO for the first time.
There you go. Okay.
And so now you need to figure out, okay, what does it really mean to be a CFO? I've impressed people enough that they've hired me, they've given me this job, but now what do I do with it? So number one, you need to network with other CFOs. The CFO community exists. There's the Financial Executives Networking Group. There is the CFO Leadership Council that has chapters in different cities and is a nationwide organization. And that is a great way to meet other CFOs and be able to ask them questions. Usually CFOs are personable people. They're willing to talk to someone who has questions, and they're willing to coach and help guide because that's the personality it takes to be a CFO. Second, be prepared to be a coach and to help other people and help the accounting people and so on. Be prepared to share your experiences. Don't rely only on your vendors, because what happens to a lot of people is, yes, they know bankers. Yes, they know finance companies. Yes, they know accountants and tax accountants and so on. Payroll companies, and those people will act like they're your best friends. Well, talk to them, get to know them, understand who their competitors are, not because you're going to change, but because you need to understand the landscape. You need to understand the market and develop friendships across businesses, across industries. Do not let yourself get siloed. Most CFOs and most CEOs find that their job is a lonely job. You need people to talk to who share the experience and who are willing to be helpful to you.
Yeah, very well said. When I think of a CFO, at least from my personal experience, I think of wearing a lot of hats. So stop me, Bob, when you hear something that you don't think applies to a CFO. Coach?
Yep.
Mediator?
Yep.
Counselor?
Yep.
Negotiator?
Yep.
Networker?
Yep.
Confidant?
Yep.
So these are the things that, and we've had these conversations with CFOs. Some people, I think, inaccurately label these as the intangibles. But I really think this is where the role really thrives as a CFO. You can learn and you can be trained on some things that are FP&A. You can do all the analysis and budgeting and forecasting. And I would argue you cannot do without those things as a CFO, but these things, these other things that you mentioned that we talked about, very critical.
What's interesting is, as you talked about it, not one of those skill sets that you mentioned comes through the finance schools.
Yeah, that's right.
Right.
Comes through experience. It comes through relationships. Comes through trial and error. Comes through trial by fire.
Human life being in relationships that have nothing to do with business.
Yeah. What about making mistakes? Can we gather some of these things from making mistakes along the way?
Wisdom actually comes from mistakes.
Yeah.
You learn wisdom. Hopefully, you're smart enough to learn from the mistakes of others. But most of us learn from mistakes in general, and usually the ones that are the deepest and the ones that really change our lives are the ones that we made. And so, yeah, you make mistakes. I've made mistakes.
Yeah. Mm. That's very good.
Great insight, my friend. And as we get ready to wrap up, is there anything or anybody that you want to highlight or recognize? Any shout outs that you want to make?
Well, how do you answer that without saying dad?
Okay.
Mm. My dad was one of the most loving men I ever knew and one of the most encouraging, and that made all the difference in the world to me.
Mm.
Jesus in my life.
Awesome.
Big one. And it's not one that you usually feel really comfortable talking about in public, because some people are very comfortable with it, and for other people, they have a different set of standards, beliefs, whatever. And so you have to pick and choose, but I know what drives me, and I'll tell anybody who's willing to listen. I've got coaches in my life. Ken Proctor is one of my coaches. He's my Vistage coach, and I view him as one of those people that I have just the highest regard for, and he makes time for me and helps me when I need it. Yeah. And then I'm part of a team of people now that have become family to me. Part of an organization we call Landing Big Whales, and we network together and help one another, and we've become family. And I'll tell you that 5 years ago, I felt very much alone. I had my relationships, but I have a group of people now that seem to be like family, and I love them.
I love it. One thing I can say about you, having met a lot of the individuals that you're connected with, and then also having the privilege of being in the same Vistage TA group as you are, is that you are a wise counselor and somebody that everybody looks to for a steady confidence and an ability to guide. And we're humbled to be able to have that in you, Bob. So part of the reason why I wanted to have you come on and share your story today is just because of the person that you are.
Oh, thank you.
And I knew you'd plug Jesus, which is always
good. Yeah, amen to that. Amen to that.
So,
Bob, from my perspective, if I may, Jason is really talked very highly of you. So it's been a pleasure to meet you. Thank you for sharing part of your Friday with us and for your openness and honesty and wisdom. And this is what we really strive to share on this platform here. So we thank you for that. Thank you for giving us some insight.
And for anybody that wants to reach you, Bob, so they can, if they have questions or want to develop a relationship with you, what's the easiest way to get in contact with you?
Well, my phone number is pretty easy. It's 281-624-6604. And you can always find me at bob@bobwellscfo.com.
Love it. And then if you're interested in connecting with Sammy and I, Sammy Aboud, A-B-B-O-U-D, Sammy S-A-M-I, and then Jason Lee. I'm not going to spell that one for you. If you can't figure that one out, then
three E's.
Yeah, exactly. Three E's. But yeah, we want to help. You can plug in with us on LinkedIn, and we'll get connected. We'd love to get your feedback. If you're a CFO and you're listening and you have interest on being on the show, reach out to us. We want to get to know you. We want to hear your story, and we want to continue to share the stories of others, individuals, and create a community here. That's part of our vision and our goal. And as always, we want to thank you for tuning in, and we hope to see you guys next week. Thanks for tuning in to the CFO Story.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.